All right.
Log Talk Radio.
So, we're live, Mark.
I mean, I heard the lady. I don't know if... I guess everyone hears that
Happy,
one.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily hear the countdown.
No, she talks to us during the show.
Yeah.
And that doesn't... it doesn't make it into the, you know, the final MP3 or whatever it is that people hear. But that one little bit, yeah. They get to hear that. This is the, I believe, the 113th Over the Monster podcast. I'm Matt Corey. I'm in Portland, Oregon. That's Mark Normandin. He's in Portland, Maine. And if you're not in Portland, you're just you're not on this show. That's I guess how we do it. Yeah, I'm not feeling my typical excitement for some reason, Mark. Jazz me up here. Let's go.
He's worried about my safety because we're going to get that blizzard with 2 feet of snow or whatever across all of New England. So,
Snowpocalypse 2015.
You know, it'll be fine. Everyone acts like they've never seen snow before, and then they remember that they see snow all the time, and then it's okay.
It's white, falls from the sky. When it lands, it sits there for a while. That's my experience with it.
It's really? It's a lot more gnashing of teeth and blood everywhere. It's really something.
Yeah, growing up outside D.C., I mean, when any snow appeared, not just actual snow, but like snow appeared on a 10-day forecast, then all of a sudden there was no toilet paper available at the grocery store anymore. So I'm familiar with that aspect of it.
But I think it's worth it to be somewhere where snow happens often, even though you get it often, because nobody reacts that way.
Right, right.
All right, let's talk about things that are not snow, like baseball, which is only played in the snow that one time.
On opening day, right? Was it like 2008?
Oh, remember it was the 97 World Series, too, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe.
It was the Cleveland and Florida at the time.
I just remember it snowed in Baltimore on opening day, like whatever it was, 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so... So there's a couple goings on, I guess, in Red Sox news, none of it's really that interesting. Dana Evelyn signed, okay. That's I think all we have to say about that. And I think as far as topics, I was thinking that we would discuss a couple different things. The 2015 projections are starting to come out. Zips is up on FanGraphs, so you can check out that and see what they think of the Red Sox. And, you know, as projections go, there's typical weirdness involved. So I think we can get into that a little bit. I wanted to talk about James Shields. And I wanted to talk about big contracts for pitchers. Alex Speer wrote a piece about this for the Globe recently, or at least more recently than our most recent podcast. So I thought that's a worthy topic because the Red Sox may at some point have to or want to spend money on a big starting pitcher or on a good starting pitcher of some sort. So I guess we'll jump in with Shields. As we record on Monday, January 26th, we are 30 days, has September, April, June, and November. Okay, with 5 days from February. February is the month where spring training starts. And that is a month where a lot of people, I mean, even early on in the season or even early on in the month, you know, guys are reporting to spring training. So, you know, typically guys have signed contracts at that point. And yet here we are with James Shields, one of the three best starting pitchers and one of the best free agents out there this offseason, still not only unsigned, but really it's completely unclear who's interested in him. I mean, where he might go. I mean, you kind of hear rumors occasionally, like well, you know, the Astros could maybe. And then the Astros are like, yeah, probably we won't. And then the Giants, you know, maybe they'll do something. And then the Giants are like, no, Ryan Vogelsong. And then the Royals is the latest thing. The Royals are monitoring James Shields. Well, of course they're monitoring James. Everyone's monitoring James Shields. That doesn't mean Jack.
Basically, every one of these has gone, this team would like James Shields. They don't think they're going to get him.
Right, right. Nobody. And then there's now there's starting to be reports about how, you know, Shields has been badly marketed. I mean, okay, maybe he has. Maybe his agent is a giant jerk. Maybe his agent is a wonderful human being. I have no knowledge of it one way or the other. But so I thought I'd throw that in there just for equal time. But it seems like if any general manager has access to Baseball Reference, they would know who James Shields is. You know, what he's good at, what he's not good at. And, you know, I think we started the offseason expecting him to break the $100 million barrier, you know, on a 5-year contract. And now it seems like that's not going to happen. You know, he may end up with a 4-year deal for less even than $80 million. So this being a Red Sox podcast, I'll phrase this in a Red Sox-y way, but you can go out wherever you want with it, Mark. Is Gene, at what point is James Shields a fit for the Red Sox, if any? And if he's not a fit in Boston, where is he fit? Because I don't have a damn clue.
Well, I think to jump back a second to the valuation thing that you were talking about.
No jumping back. I just asked the question.
I don't think anyone knows how to evaluate him, to value him properly. You know, so much of this industry and the market and everything is based on comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, name the last 33-year-old.
It's an odd age to be free agent.
33 was as good as he was over the last 4 years of his career. You know, I think 11th best ERA plus in baseball over the last four years, a minimum like 500 or 600 innings or something.
Yeah.
He led the league in innings over that time. How often is a guy who's 33 show up as free agent and is, you know, wanted by everyone just on that? And how often is that guy as good as Shields has been leading up to his free agency? It's like they don't really know what the baseline's supposed to be, and they don't really trust the baseline that Shields camp presented, and kind of nothing's happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's like first he was waiting for Lester, and they hoped that would set his market. And, you know, because this whole thing has been, I am a cheaper alternative to Lester or Scherzer. But people didn't bite. And now nobody seems to be biting after Scherzer. You know, someone's going to sign him at some point. Shields is way too good. It's not like he's going to get some horrible, disappointing deal or anything like that.
Yeah. He's not Kendrys Morales or Stephen Drew.
Yeah.
This is not a replay of that. It's not like Shields is not worth a draft pick.
He's going to get paid by someone.
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing to me that's weird about it is just that there's really been no talk of him, and he's good. I mean, he's really good. I mean, the other thing is that to counteract what I just said, there wasn't a whole lot of talk about Max Scherzer until all of a sudden, hey, Max Scherzer was about to sign with the Nationals.
Yeah.
And then he did sign with the Nationals. So
Shields was probably having conversations with like 12 teams right now, and just none of them have progressed to the point where anyone's the favorite. And at some point, both sides on this are going to have to make a decision.
I would think you'd hear about it, right? Wouldn't you?
We have been hearing about it. We have heard like 12 teams attached to Shields over the course of months, and none of them have really bowed out except for a couple of teams who said they can't fit him in the budget.
Yeah.
You know, the Diamondbacks tried, but, you know, for some reason paying him pennies wasn't just going to work. The Blue Jays would like him, but their budget is all kind of messed up.
Right.
For 2015, you know, they can afford him after 2015, but he's a free agent now.
Right, right.
So that might be more complicated. So just nothing's really been finalized. The only thing we know about is that he had a $110 million offer for over 5 years, and probably existed, but it was probably from a team that had to pay him that to attract him. You know, Shields is a guy who's been on two World Series teams. He's always been lauded for, you know, wanting, like, being a good guy to have on a good, on a winning team, and always being wanting to win. He's not going to sign, you know, apologies to the Astros, he's not going to sign a 5-year deal with them if they were the guys who offered $110 million. You know, it's just not going to happen. It's, well, this is the last deal that Shields is going to get that puts him in a position to maybe win that World Series, you know? So.
Yeah, I don't entirely disagree, but I disagree a little bit. I mean, I think it has to do with, you know, with where it is, but it also has to do with the money. I mean, we know that, you know, John Lester said it, came on Boston radio and said it was, you know, really, really difficult for him to leave. And, you know, had the Red Sox been, you know, I don't know how you want to phrase it, but I'll say competitive with it, with their offer, or more competitive with their offer. I mean, they were $20 million behind the Cubs, which is substantial money. You know, then Lester would be in Boston now. So it's not,
I mean, sure, it's
the location.
I'm just saying that it doesn't matter if the Astros offer him money because they're not going to win. So
yeah, well, presuming there's other offers in the vicinity is what I'm saying. Anyway.
But, well, okay. I'm saying he's not at the point where there are other offers yet. You know, everyone's still, it's been a slow moving process because he was waiting for Lester, and then nothing materialized after that. And everyone's waiting for Scherzer. And, you know, the Hamels thing has kind of just held things up too, because teams really wanted to get him. You saw the Rangers go and get Giovanni Gallardo instead of trying to sign Shields or trying to trade for Hamels.
Right.
The Padres went out and signed Brandon Moreau and Josh Johnson, and seem like they might just be going to go for that and, like, fix things mid-season. So there's been a lot of that, and I think Shields has had basically the wrong thing happen to him at every turn. But, again, it's January 26th. Spring training's in a few weeks, like you mentioned. Someone is going to push things, whether it's Shields camp trying to finally nail something down, or a team finally breaking down and realizing that they're starting, you know, the season probably more than a pitcher short of what they need, and they can't afford to let Shields go.
So, what, let me ask you, in attempt to have my earlier question answered.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. But I think those were, you know, it was a good discussion. So, you know, what do you think Shields will end up? I mean, is he going to get 480, roughly speaking?
I think so. You know, still get his $20 million a year, which is kind of the benchmark right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't be for a really long time. It's kind of a way for a team to handle a guy who is 33 years old, who has, you know, the mileage that Shields has on him is a good thing. There is a distinct possibility that he throws 800 innings for whoever signs him for 4 years. There's also the chance that all of a sudden, you know, his arm hasn't given out to this point, and maybe it does.
Right.
So there's got to be some give and take there, and that's probably what a lot of this is about, is Shields camp pointing to his flawless track record and other teams going, yeah, but we're signing you for the next 4 years,
right,
not the last four.
Right. So let's suppose that, roughly speaking, 480 is what he gets.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say roughly speaking, you know, it could be 485, it could be 475, I don't know, whatever the number is. But 4 years. Would you, Mark Normand, general manager of the Boston Red Sox, given the current salary structure and rotation that the Red Sox have, and all their contracts and everything existing, would you give him that deal? I know you like Shields, so that's partly why I'm asking you. I think we know what my answer would be.
I like Shields, and I think that I don't think it would be the wrong answer if the Red Sox signed him. I don't know. I still don't know if I'd absolutely do it, which makes me about as useful in this conversation as everyone who doesn't know if they want to sign him.
No, I think that's fine. I mean, you know, there's certainly gray area, and it's a tough, you know, it's a tough decision when you have to, you know, do yes or no. You know, it's a binary answer, and you know, if you could bet 75% on Shields, you know, you maybe
yeah,
do that.
I think I'm not really concerned about Fenway being a poor fit for him. You know, people will cite his stats at Fenway in his career, forgetting that when James Shields used to pitch in the AL East a lot, Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz were still hitting back-to-back. You know, like he was facing the Red Sox, who,
right,
even when they were hurt in 2010, had the best offense in baseball because they just had so many hitters.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think possibly an undersold aspect of the Red Sox rotation as it stands now is that, you know, the Yankees offense and the Rays offense are both pretty likely to suck next year and quite possibly the year after that as well. I think going any farther than 2 years in the future, it's really hard to say what will happen. But yeah, it definitely doesn't seem like the, you know, the overall quality offensively of the AL East is going to be as tough, you know, as it has been for sure.
I do think there's still a little bit of a risk where Shields is a fly ball guy. So if he does start to lose it, you know, he might not.
Mm-hmm.
He might be one of those guys who's just really good for a while, or he gets two really great years. And then, you know, you're not so concerned later if he costs more than he's worth because the payroll's dropped by so much or whatever. But, you know, we've seen what happens to him if his command is a little off, which rarely happens. But you don't want to be paying him $20 million a year if it happens when he's 35, and there's a good chance of it happening when he's 35, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I kind of understand why they're not in on him, even if I like Shields. Especially because, you know, Porcello's a free agent in a year, and he could prove that, yes, he is a number two starter who can throw 200 innings. If you sign Shields, you probably can't afford him. If his knee's okay, and he's able to retain that progress he made against lefties from 2013, which was always the big question mark with him. Can he get lefties out? Because if he can't, you know, he's a mid-rotation guy maybe. But if he can get lefties out and he's healthy, you know, the Sox are going to make a move to keep Masterson around.
Right.
And that's going to cost money too. It won't cost Porcello money, but it's going to cost money. So, I don't know. You know, you might sign Shields and plug a hole, but cause two more to open up. It's weird. So I think there's a lot of teams in that kind of situation where, man, Shields would really make them better.
Right, right.
But, you know, it has to be kind of on their terms. For 480, it's hard for me to say no to Shields, but at the same time, I don't really see the need to push it. The Sox have Joe Kelly as their fifth starter right now, and I would really prefer that's not the case. But if they sign Alexi Ogando, who can go in the bullpen and be a spot starter and be a right-handed reliever, kind of a swing man guy, you know, it's cool. They have some depth on hand. They can always make a trade in season. They can, you know, if they want to spend a lot of money on someone who's going to be old and questionable, they can try and trade for Cliff Lee in July if he's proven that his elbow is actually okay.
Right, right.
You know, and it's a ton of money, but it's pretty much just money at that point.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what Ruben.
Yeah, we'll see what the Phillies think. But, you know, he doesn't have the same leverage with Cliff Lee that he has with Cole Hamels, who is ridiculously amazing. And his contract looks even better after Lester and Scherzer.
Yeah, but, you know, I love the when I hear that argument, because part of the reason that Lester and Scherzer got the deals they got is because Amaro gave that idiot deal to to Hamels. I mean,
oh, the Hamels deal is great. It's just not on the right team.
Well, no. It's great now. It's great in light of all these other deals, but it was a stepping stone to those other deals. Without that deal, I mean, that's an extension signed. Not even, you know, there was not even a free agent deal. It was an extension while the guy was under contract. So of course it's going to be less. And it was, you know, setting the free agent market at that point, as Amaro likes to do. So anyway, that's really neither here nor there. Yeah, I think the Shields thing is interesting, and it sort of gets us off into this other area where Alex Speer wrote an article for The Globe, where he now writes. And Alex Speer is awesome, and you should all read Alex Speer if you don't. But if you listen to this podcast, I'm guessing you read Alex Speer. Speer wrote this piece about the Red Sox and starting pitching contracts, and how it's sort of unclear whether the Red Sox will ever go out and sign, you know, a starting pitcher to a big deal. I mean, at this point, you know, you have to figure that if you're going to sign a guy who's going to be at the top of your rotation, it's going to cost you $150 million. And that's going to be, you know, to start with. If you're going to sign a David Price, it's going to cost more than that. You know, you're going to sign a Steven Strasburg, it's going to cost more than that. So Spear kind of made the case that the Red Sox are sort of out when it comes to signing free agent starters. And, you know, going back, you know, through at least through the John Henry years, you know, but up to the point where he bought the team in 2002, you know, the Red Sox really haven't made any free agent commitments that were at the top of the market to starting pitchers.
Hey, I wrote this article like a month ago.
Okay, well, there you go. Fine. But, you know, John Lackey is the one notable exception, but Lackey wasn't I think I can't recall if he was the best pitcher on the market at that point, but the contract they gave him wasn't a market-setting contract.
It was an A.J. Burnett deal.
Okay.
You know, where you're paying a guy a really good, a premium rate to be a number two starter. You know, they weren't paying him to be the ace of the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, when the rest of the guys that they've acquired have been through trades, like, you know, like Beckett, and they've kept those guys there through extensions, like Beckett, and like Lester. So it kind of makes you wonder, is this an organizational strategy to avoid this kind of thing? And if it is, maybe signing James Shields is the best that they could possibly do. I mean, if they're going to, you know, there's going to be, as has been talked about over and over and over, there's going to be, as much as there ever has been, a glut of good starting pitchers on the free agent market this coming off season, probably. I mean, you know, you never know because guys can always sign extensions, but that's the way it looks right now. And so it would seem that if there was ever a time for the Red Sox, especially considering the current state of their rotation, to jump in to the free agent market and get somebody really good, that would be the time. But considering it's never happened before, and, you know, it's still almost inconceivable to me that the Red Sox didn't re-sign John Lester because he was such a perfect fit for the team and for the organization. It still kind of blows my mind that they didn't do it. I was, just before we started recording, I was looking at a piece essentially about a quote that Dustin Pedroia gave saying that, you know, he's still sad that Lester's not on the Red Sox anymore. And I am too. It's like, what the F? But anyway.
Get you back on track here. No more Lester talk.
I'm trying. John Lester.
All right. So.
But anyway,
I know, yeah.
Is Shields might be the you know, the very best that they could do if they're not going to go out and, you know, and get a top guy. I mean, Shields is a guy who can front a rotation. He's not going to be the best probably pitcher, you know, in game one. But he'll
get you to game one.
Right.
Which is,
Exactly. I was actually going to say that. I was going to say that, Norman.
Well, you know, there's a lot of hand-wringing over how, you know, like James Shields' playoff performances or whatever, and it's really funny. Pete Abraham mentioned this to me on Twitter, but he was like, you know, there's a lot of complaining going on about who's going to start game one for a team that finished last, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, right. That's true. Well, I mean, in fairness, Dave.
Yeah, they're better now, but still, it's like.
They just spent a whole bunch of money and blah, blah, blah.
Get
like, there are expectations, but yes.
Get to game one first.
If you phrase it that way, then yeah.
I think, you know, if you want to sign a free agent and you want to guarantee one right now, Shields is probably your best value bet. Which sounds insane to say about someone who's going to make $20 million a year, but please remember, if every year that you say the contracts look insane, you're the one who needs the change, not baseball.
Well, that's the thing. It's going to – and sort of I guess that's my point, is that it's only going to get more insane from here, right? I mean,
yeah.
I guess at some point maybe the TV bubble bursts or we hit –
Oh, it'll burst. It'll be ugly, but we don't have to worry about that.
Okay, but – at least for the foreseeable future.
Those 20-year deals are going to hold up for a while. It's fine.
Yeah,
that money will come from somewhere.
So
until it doesn't.
At least for the foreseeable future, you know.
Yeah.
We're looking at, you know, $170 to $200 million if you want a guy who can front your rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Red Sox, for all the talent that they have in the minor league system, they don't really have a guy that – you know, that anyone thinks is, and, you know, all the caveats in the world, you never know, guys can make jumps that people don't see happening. Well,
yeah, I mean, there are people who think like Eduardo Rodriguez could someday front a rotation, but there are way more people who say that those people are crazy. So, but you never know, like, hey, maybe he best case scenarios his way through the rest of his career. And
exactly.
You know.
Yep.
So, yeah, so you don't know.
They have somebody, but the chances are that the guys they have in their system right
exactly.
now are not.
You don't plan that.
You know, and it's sort of odd because the Red Sox have always been a, hey, I have a splinter. That sucks. It's the Red Sox have always, at least in the playoffs, been a team that has – that has beaten the team with the good rotation without any great top-end talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look back to 2004 when they, you know, mopped the Cardinals out of the World Series. The Cardinals had a strong rotation. They were all above-average pitchers. In fact, they had a couple. I guess they had Wainwright and –
No, Wainwright, not in 2004.
Not into, who am I thinking of?
I can't even remember, but yeah, it was all above average guys. Like Jeff Suppan really put a solid 200 innings in for them,
right?
But then had to win a World Series game in a series where Pedro Martinez and Curt Schilling were pitching.
Right, exactly. So the Red Sox had the top end talent, and in those single games, which is hard to predict, but in those single games, they performed like top end talent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it'll sort of be a role reversal, you know, if the Red Sox do make the playoffs.
You know, then again, in 2007, they won with rookie John Lester and Dice K. You know, like Beckett was there too, but Beckett's not.
Beckett was the reason that they at least got there. I mean, Beckett.
No, Beckett, but Beckett's really good, but, you know, Beckett never grew up into the ace that people thought he was. He was still as good as he was when he was younger.
That year, I think people said he was an ace. I mean, you know, we can go back and whatever. And, you know, if Lester has a bad year this year and a worse year the next year, we'll go back and say he wasn't an ace, too. But, all right, so here's the, just for the record, this
well,
is the...
hold on. Let's just jump back. Let's skip this and jump back to the question I didn't finish answering.
Okay.
Before we get way too off target here.
Splinter.
So, yeah, I think Shields, if they want a good value bet right now, sure. You know, he's going to be only 4 years. You can't sign anyone for 4 years these days unless they're not that good.
Right, right.
Or they're old. So Shields is kind of old. So you take that risk. He's a little older than Lackey was. It's going to be for a shorter deal. Right. He's a lot healthier than Lackey was when the Sox signed him. But if you want that kind of guy, there he is. The only reason to not do that, other than fear of how Shields is going to age, I really think it's Porcello. And that's because he might be the exception. You know, his next deal he signs is probably going to end when he's 33. You kind of forget how young he is, but Porcello's only going to be 26 this year.
He's super young. He's super young, yeah. And
so if you're going to give a six-year deal for $100 million or whatever to somebody, it's probably going to be the guy who is that young, has been that healthy, doesn't have the kind of repertoire where you expect his arm to fall off eventually, you know, that sort of thing.
I'm really looking forward to seeing him pitch because – you know, obviously you've seen him pitch with the Tigers and stuff, but not on a, you know, on a day-to-day basis like in Boston. And I'm really curious to see how it works because, you know, you look at the strikeout numbers and they're way below average. And I think that's, you know, maybe it's out-of-dated thinking on my part, but that's it's a little scary to me. And so I like you know, the walks are low, the ground balls are high. There's obvious value there. And it's not like he never strikes anybody out at all, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how his season comes out. I mean, if he's going to be able to you know, to bring the strikeouts back up a little bit, keep the walks down, and keep the ground balls.
See, he doesn't need the strikeouts though. I know that we're conditioned to think that strikeouts, are, you know, it's like great because the defense doesn't have to get involved, but
right.
That's more of a concern when you're fielding in front of the Tigers defense.
Well, it's a much bigger concern when you're fielding in front of the Tigers defense. I think it's still a concern when you're in front of any defense, especially.
Well, yeah, more so than a strikeout. But I'm just saying the leap from, oh, he strikes people out, everything is cool, to, oh, God, he doesn't strike anything out, everyone, you know,
right.
Stockpile groceries, the apocalypse is nigh, is like, that's just too much. Like, there's plenty of guys with plenty of success who got way more ground balls than they got strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a matter of, you know, Buchholz, during all but one of Buchholz's best years, you know, the guy wasn't striking people out. 2013 is the weird moment where he just started to miss bats.
Yeah.
But before that, you know, he's just a guy who pounded the lower part of the zone, made life hell for hitters. And
that was the reinvented Buchholz. I mean, when he first went through the system and then showed up and threw a no-hitter, he was a big strikeout guy. You know?
Oh, sure, yeah. But he was also
he fell apart,
talked to Dice K about strategy for how to pitch. So,
oh boy, no, let's not.
But you don't have to strike guys out. They're great. Strikeout numbers are up all across baseball, so you start to see, oh, this is below average. Mm-hmm. But whatever, you know, they're all different creatures.
That's true. You know? So
as long as they're successful at what they're successful at, you know.
There's lots of ways to get value out of players and out of pitchers, but.
If Porcello's getting the 200 innings because he's able to efficiently pitch low in the zone and hit his spots when he has to,
right,
and he's not giving up these big home runs because even when he misses, it's a walk instead of, you know, a ball over the middle of the plate, that's fine. You know, he's probably going to get that guy to ground to a double play anyway.
Possible. So.
not when Miguel Cabrera's at third.
No.
I think he's the reason that you hold off. Like, if you need a specific, like, monetary reason. Because, yeah, you can go, well, Shields might decline, but at the same time, it's like, you're the Red Sox. You make $400 million a year. Just, you know, pay him.
Right. Although you can make the argument that they should have already done that with Lester.
That? Get out of here. But, I think he's probably the reason that you hold off. So, and who knows? He might find another gear.
That would be awesome. I look forward to that gear. I was just gonna ask you, but before I ask you this Porcello related question, here is, and just for fun, here is the Cardinals 2004 Cardinals starting pitching staff. Okay, and you will notice that four of the pitchers are exactly the same guy. So it's Matt Morris.
Jason Marquis is involved.
Jason Marquis, right? Matt Morris, Jason Marquis, Woody Williams, and Jeff Suppan. They're all the exact same pitcher. And then Chris Carpenter is the guy.
Yeah, I knew two of them.
Chris Carpenter, who was very good. Of those guys were. Sorry? What, Mark?
I didn't say anything.
Oh.
I didn't say anything.
Carpenter was the one big standout there. Jason Marquis had a really good year. And the only other guy that threw any more than two starts for them was rookie Dan Heron, who they traded the next year, I think.
You know, here's another funny thing that I think people are kind of tossing aside just because it doesn't seem realistic, but that's just because we're all really negative people about this.
Nope, not.
Clay Buchholz has an option for $13 million for 2016. Mm-hmm. He's got another inexpensive option for 2017.
I think it's also for $13
million. He had a pretty good second half. You know, the further he got away from the physical issues, you know, people like to say, oh, remember the whole thing about him saying he's not ready to pitch again in 2013, and certain columnists gave him all kinds of shit about it, and then he looked gassed in the playoffs and was still effective, but then looked like a total mess the next year.
Yeah.
Almost like he wasn't ready to come back.
Yeah.
You know, the further away he got from those things, he looked stronger in the second half. The ERA was still a bit futzy, but you know, the Red Sox had a terrible defense last year by the end of the year with everyone hurt or missing or being introduced to the team or whatever. You know, he had an encouraging second half, and it kind of just went unnoticed because the team was otherwise kind of a dumpster fire. but, you know, if Buchholz reemerges and can give them 170, 180 innings of the kind of pitcher that we know he's capable of, you know, it's not 200 innings, it's not 220 innings. But it's 180 innings of a guy who has just created a ton of value over the years.
Right.
In the innings where he is on the mound. Like, maybe he's not an ace in the sense, like, you know, he's going to be there for 33 starts or whatever. But, you know, he used to be pretty similar to, like, what Johnny Cueto was before Cueto finally got healthy. You know, if he was on the mound and he was feeling good, mm-hmm. like, nobody who can beat him.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
You know, maybe Buchholz comes back. Maybe he throws out. Maybe he's not quite what he was, but maybe he's a 350 ERA guy. He gives you 180 innings. And then you have him for $13 million in 2016. And if he does it again, you have him for $13 million in 2017. So, you know, between that, between Masterson, between Porcello, you know, maybe they've already got these guys. Maybe they already got everybody they need.
Right. right?
And the fact that that is a possibility probably holds them up from doing too much more, because do you really want to find a Buchholz replacement before you know if Buchholz is your Buchholz replacement?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the issue with Buchholz, and I'm a, you know, more or less, I'm a big fan of his. I think you know the issue with Buchholz, it's that it's really hard to count on him. I mean, he could be that guy, but he could also be someone who's, like you said, a dumpster fire.
My offseason strategy with building the rotation was treat Clay Buchholz like he's a number five starter.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you have to build the 2016 and 17 and 18 rotations already. As far as your 2015 building goes. So
I think the Red Sox subscribe to that strategy as well. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, it, you know, had Lester come along, then things would be different. But, he didn't. And so I think they're sort of taking it a little more day by day now, which you know, I think makes a lot of sense. So let me ask you this question then. And as we get towards the end of this podcast, we've got an hour, and I think that's probably good because I have a lot of other things I need to do.
Brag much.
What?
Brag much. Oh, I'm so busy. I can't be on my own podcast for too long. Oh, just so much to do.
Okay. Anyway, I'll talk to you off air. Who, in your opinion, Mark, will be more valuable in 2015? Rick Porcello or Yoenis Cespedes?
I don't know. They'll probably be about the same.
I think that's the correct answer.
Yeah, it's boring. It's a really boring answer. I'm sorry, everyone who just fell asleep. But Cespedes is, you know, he can field. He can throw. Mm-hmm. He has ridiculous power.
Yep.
You know, the Tigers Park is not the pitcher-friendly place that it used to be. So, and not that Cespedes would have trouble putting the ball out of there. He played in Oakland, you know.
Right.
He played in Oakland on purpose. He signed there.
Yeah.
It's probably just a challenge. You just want to see if he could hit the ball that far. Porcello, you know, you might get 200 innings of pretty above average pitching. So, you know, they're both great. They're probably both underrated. And they're probably equally valuable, which is how the trade ended up being, you know, Alex Wilson and really low level guy for Porcello along with Cespedes.
Right. The 2015 Zips projections, like I mentioned earlier, are out on FanGraphs for the Red Sox. I think they came out this weekend or today.
Mm-hmm.
And they agree with you. I mean, the Tigers projections were out before. I don't know. They came out a while ago, but they have Cespedes at 275, 324, 482. And with pitching and defense, they have 3.1 wins. So three wins for Cespedes. And for Porcello, they have him at 183 and two-thirds innings. Where's ERA? Oh, there it is. A 3.72 ERA, which they have as 9% above average. That seems high, but whatever. We'll focus on the 9% above average thing. And they have him at 3.5 wins. So 0.4 wins is the difference here, which...
And in a projection. I mean, that's not...
Right.
I don't pay attention to...
That's why they're the same. I said they're the same. So Pecota, Baseball Prospectus's projection system should be out in the near future. I have their projections here, but I can't share them with you.
Yes, you can.
No, I can't. In any case, I think it's an interesting comparison to make, especially, I mean, you know, in light of the trade. So the other things that are interesting are that the most valuable, well, who would you guess would be the most valuable player on the Red Sox?
If I know anything about people over, oh, God, watch my words here.
Be nice, Mark. Be nice.
Yeah. If I know anything about people getting overexcited about what projections say, I'm going to say Mookie Betts is projected to be the best player in the Red Sox.
Now, that's a very interesting guess.
If it's not him, it's Rusney, which is even weirder.
it's actually neither of those.
What?
At least according to Zips, only Zips. So the most valuable player, and I'm going to use decimal points, even though it's silly, because it's like we said, it's projection, but whatever, it's a list, is Pedroia. They have Pedroia at 4 wins, 3.8 wins.
That's reasonable. That's weird.
It is. I like that. And then Purcello.
No offense, Dan.
Then Purcello at 3.5. And I'm going back and forth between pitchers and hitters. And then
okay, hold on. How many games do they have Betts at?
Betts?
Yeah, how many plate appearances in games or whatever?
Hold on. It's all in three different things, so I have to go back and forth. They have 653 plate appearances for Betts.
Okay, so they haven't played a full season.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. No, I applaud that. There's been too much, I will not name projection systems or people or whatever, but there's been a little too much push for Betts already, to the point where if he has the season that Zips is projecting, people will think that he kind of busted.
Right. Well, yeah, there's the Bill James projections, which is what you might be referring to.
That's part of it.
Those are I don't know anything about what goes into those, but I know
they're all like 90th percentile.
Yeah, exactly. They're all every year they're overly exuberant, and you know whatever, that's fine. It
used to be fun to look at Barry Bonds projections through it though.
Oh my God!
Because he'd actually hit them.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and it's like okay, so these are video game projections and Bonds video game player.
I don't think we've established Bonds is going to hit 450 this year. That seems unrealistic.
oh, look at that! Huh.
Wait a minute, he did. Yeah, so they have Betts at 3.1 wins. They have him hitting, 266, 336, 408, which pretty good. 13%
yeah, that's
rate,
a pretty low
9% walk rate, which is quite nice.
I guess they're expecting pretty low. Or his defense is really highly regarded. I was thinking maybe the offensive environment was really low, but
yeah, I'm not sure, and
probably a little of both.
Probably have it listed here somewhere, but I don't see where they have him playing.
Yeah, I see that. That seems like, you know, not too many strikeouts. He uses his patience.
Right.
He doesn't hit for a lot of power, but he doesn't look like he can't.
Right. Do you know what's go ahead.
No, I think that's a good projection.
Yeah.
I have a lot of faith in Betts becoming really special. I just don't know if it's going to happen right now.
Yeah.
And I think people need to remember after Xander Bogaerts last year, who is still going to be a star as far as I'm concerned. Like
yes.
Sometimes guys struggle and it happens. They have a lot to learn.
That's true. So that's actually an interesting one. I was going to go somewhere else, but let's do Xander. What do they have Xander at? Oh, those are pitchers. That's why he's not listed. They have him at 2.3 wins. Okay. I think it's a reasonable.
Part of that's probably defense, right?
Yeah, yeah. They have him listed as a negative defender, and I don't know what the numbers mean here, to be honest. Like they have Pedroia as a plus 12, they have Bogaerts as a minus 5, and actually looking down the list, minus 5 is the biggest minus that the Red Sox have. What that means, I couldn't tell you.
That's pretty big for a mid-range projection to say that someone's going to be that far down. I would assume.
Yeah, we've discussed Bogaerts' defense before, and
oh yeah, yeah, it could go anywhere. You know,
I'm not expecting a lot. You know, I think he's there as that, and if he can approach averageness overall, defensively, then that'll be great. Because like you, I believe in his bat. I think he's going to be awesome, awesome possum. Rusty Castillo. The same overall value as Bogaerts, 2.4 instead of 2.3, same thing.
Cool.
They have Hanser Ramirez projected for 2.7 and Pablo Sandoval projected for 2.8. Both of them they have Ramirez as a plus defender and Sandoval as a negative one. So.
Well, left field, as we've talked about. Hanley, as long as Hanley shows up with all of his limbs, he's going to be He's got to be helpful in left field.
I agree. I think
unless he's never caught a pop-up at shortstop, and I just somehow was not aware of this.
You know what's funny? I heard an interview with John Farrell where he said that Hanley had played the outfield before, and I didn't know that. I had assumed that he had never played the outfield before. I know he didn't play it with the Red Sox.
Funny story. One of the first things I ever wrote on my terrible blog that I don't even remember the name of, that I think 50 people a day accidentally stumbled upon, was about moving Hanley to center field and instead of re-signing Johnny Damon. And they ended up trading him instead. But it's that even it was kind of like, please get Hanley off of shortstop.
Right.
Just make him not play there, please.
Well, that's the funny thing is he's actually pretty athletic.
He's just a garbage defensive shortstop.
Right. Yeah, he's just not really, extraordinarily quick.
If Hanley played the outfield, it was in some kind of off-season league or something because he's never played it as a professional.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I found that to be an odd statement by Farrell. Maybe.
He could have played in a Dominican League or Puerto Rican League or something, some offseason.
But I'm very optimistic about Hanley in left. The bar for averageness is pretty low there, and I think it's pretty likely that he's gonna hit that and also hit a lot of pitches pretty hard is my hope.
I mean, even Adam Dunn only caused so much damage defensively.
Right.
You know?
Right. There's
so.
Yeah, the ground ball nature of the Red Sox staff, at least as it stands right now, should help him at least this season. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, get him acclimated and all that. And he's gonna have guys like Victorino, Castillo, and Betts to his left. So, a lot of the range is gonna be covered.
Yep. Well, unless there's any other projections that you want to hit? Anybody else you're curious in hearing?
No, I think Rusney, Mookie, those are kind of the big ones. And Bogarts, those are kind of the big ones for me. I saw some, I think they were fan projections, so they matter, not at all.
Right. Yeah.
But they had Rusney as like a 5-win player, and I'm like, wow, you guys didn't listen to Ben Charrington at all.
When
Charrington was like, Castillo's going to be really good. He's not going to be a star. Like, things you don't say about your own player, unless you're trying to protect that player.
Well, it will be interesting to see how he does. I mean, we know that at least when you're talking about WAR numbers, which I guess we are because you just said 5-win player, the bump.
Well, that's what the projection said.
The bump you get for playing center field is huge. So if you play it well, you get a bigger bump. I think it wouldn't shock me if Castillo came out of the gate and hit really well. He's been playing in Puerto Rico. I forget where.
He played in he played for Alex Cora's team.
Right. No, that's not in Puerto Rico. That's in South America.
No, it's in Puerto Rico.
Oh, was it Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, so I was wrong that I was right. But he's not playing full 162 or anything close to it. He's never played full.
Well, never.
But he's
Cuban,
never played anything.
The Cuban season is 90 games long.
Right. So, it wouldn't shock me if he came out hitting really well, and then his pitchers started to get a book on him. Maybe that would happen at roughly the time when he would start to wear down a little bit physically. Mm-hmm. And that's actually where having Mookie and Victorino probably helps a lot.
I think there's going to be a rotation for those guys almost from the start because they don't want Victorino to wear down and they don't want Castillo to wear down.
Right.
And, if it gets to be July and, Mookie and Castillo are just playing way too well to not play every day, maybe you trade Victorino for something you need.
Right, right.
But there's no – the rush to clear Victorino out is – that some people have. I don't understand it because you've got Castillo's never played more than 90 games and his last full season in the Cuban League was 2 years ago. And Mookie, you don't know what you're going to get from Mookie. I mean, we know what we hope they're going to get from Mookie, but no one knows. And Victorino could bat 320 with power for 3 weeks, and then his back could, you know,
right,
die again.
It could.
Which is even more reason to not play him every single day. You know, he's a guy who played through a lot of bumps and bruises when they didn't have anybody else to put out there.
Right.
Don't make him do that.
Right.
Which is what sounds like they don't, you know, they know, like, none of them are actually the starter, but they're going to play every day. Betts might play the most just because he's the best fit to lead off. But
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, even the idea, if they're going to trade Victorino, the time to do it, honestly, is spring training after he showed up and looked healthy. I mean, if you're going to keep him, the time that he's really valuable to the Red Sox, I would argue, is actually the second half of the season. You know, when guys like Betts and Castillo, you know, start to wear down, and when you can really kind of make use of that, you know, fourth starting outfielder, so to speak. You know, even if both of those guys have really strong, you know, first halves, I would still argue against, you know, dealing Victorino just for that reason. You know, we'll see. It's definitely going to be an interesting season. There's not been really a Red Sox team like this, I don't know, since this 2006, and this probably projects to be a better defensive team than that.
I don't know. It kind of reminds me of 2013, and I'm not saying that in some kind of optimistic they're going to win the World Series way. I just mean, you see a lot of pieces here where if things go the way that you want them to, they're going to be a terror for everybody else.
Right.
But you can really easily see where, you know, a lot of things go wrong, and maybe it's the 2014 team again where they're just not, you know, there's a lot of talent there, but there's some pieces missing, and there's just maybe a little too much risk in too many places. But it's not a bad year to try that strategy, because the AL, there are maybe two teams in the American League, maybe two.
Right.
Well, no, there are definitely two, but it might just be those two, who are probably out of it. You know, unless the Astros lineup is ridiculous, they're not going to make playoffs this year.
Right.
And the Twins aren't going to, because they're not built, you know, they're built for later. But, you know, even the Rays just traded away Matt Joyce, Ben Zobrist, you know, lost Joe Maddon, lost their general manager. And you could still argue that they might make the playoffs because their rotation is insane.
Right.
You know, they traded the worst of the pitchers in it. Matt Moore's coming back. They've got Archer. They've got Cobb. They've got Smiley.
Yeah.
You know, that's still a ridiculous rotation. Longoria is back. You've got Longoria hitting again. You've got Steve Souza, who they really think is going to be a big deal.
No, you know, maybe they should be back. Oh, wait.
But, you know, they've got a team that could be pretty good. Again, things might be terrible, but they could be pretty good.
Yeah.
Even the, you know, can kind of let them blow. You know, Sabathia regains 75% of his form and is just there for 30 starts. You know, if Pineda is actually healthy, if Tanaka is able to do it again.
Yeah.
If half of the lineup questions I have are answered, you know, in the positive, they're in the mix. They won 85 games with an awful team last year. Or 84 wins, or whatever, you know, disappointing for Yankees.
I think it was 85, something like that. And yeah, I mean, they got outscored, I think, on the year again, because, mm-hmm. you know, the magic of the pinstripes or some shit. But
it's that way all across the league, you know, like the A's, everyone, they looked like they were dismantling for 2015. And then they started adding all these pieces where it was like, oh, you might actually be better than you were, maybe. I don't really know because I got lost in the math, but. Have a year where things can totally go to hell or you're in the playoffs, hey, might as well be 2015 because it doesn't look like anybody in the AL knows where they stand except for the Twins.
It's true. It's going to be a boring trade deadline.
Yeah, so, you know, you kind of hope that some teams just fall completely out of it early or else, you know.
Well, I mean, if it's going to be tough. You know, this is a Red Sox podcast. You know, like you said, you never know. Things could all go to hell, and at that point, you know, maybe there's room to trade a guy like Masterson or even a guy like Buchholz or Miley or Porcello. I mean, almost anybody there. You know,
you could, yeah, you know, they got, if they're not doing well, Deal Victorino.
Right, right, yeah.
If you're not going to re-sign Napoli, deal Napoli. You know,
a lot of guys
at the end of the deals
could be dealt. Napoli is interesting. We only have 5 minutes left on the thing here, but you know, I guess there's no rush to extend him. But I wouldn't be against, you know, talking to him and seeing if he's interested in adding, I don't know, you know, 228 or something to the back of his contract.
Yeah, I'd give him the David Ortiz treatment where you're just kind of like, you know, we love what you do, but please recognize that you are this old.
Yeah.
And you have this degenerative hip thing, but we'll pay you right. We're just going to do it, you know, in small amounts.
Yeah, I think that's...
And if he's down for it, then awesome. You have Mike Napoli. And if not, well, you better hope that Alan Craig started hitting again.
It'll be interesting to see how Napoli does, given, I mean, I imagine you heard about the procedure he had where they essentially broke his face and then put it back together.
Yes, the sleep apnea effect.
Oh, good Lord. Poor man.
But, man, if he was able to hit like that when he was, you know,
dead-eyed
and fatigued and kind of out of his mind, tired, I'd like to see what he can do when he's rested and focused.
I know. I'm kind of excited about that, but...
Even if it just makes sure that he's as good as he was, you know, as he gets older, like that's, he doesn't have to be better. Napoli is already really good as he is.
Right. Well, it's going to be an interesting season, and it wouldn't shock me if half the team was like all-star caliber and the other half was just dog poop.
Yeah. You know, I went through a kind of a best and worst case scenario thing for the rotation, over Over the Monster.
What website was that?
Yeah, Over the Monster? You might have heard of it.
No, is it? Is that a new website that you run?
Yeah, it's based on this podcast. You know, no big deal. There's just so many, you know, probably the only one, in my guess, were the ones who didn't have huge extremes. Because, you know, if they're bad, if they're the bad versions of themselves, they're still league average pitchers doing 200 innings. They're just mid-rotation guys.
Right.
But you have Buchholz, who is a And he's gonna his ERA range is probably like three runs. Like, I don't know, maybe he throws 180 innings of 2.5 ball.
I think
he gives up 6 runs every game.
I think you could make a case that there's a 5 run difference. I mean, I could see Buchholz with a 7 run ERA or a 2 run ERA.
Buchholz leads the league in ERA one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait a minute, you don't want your ERA to be high? Oh, rats.
But, you know, you got him, you got Joe Kelly, who is either a swingman or a capable mid-rotation guy, or I don't, you know, an embarrassment at the back end of the rotation that they don't have anyone to replace him with.
He said in an interview recently that he's going to win the Cy Young this year. So I look forward
I love that.
Yeah, I think Joe Kelly.
He seems really cool. I hate saying anything even partially negative about Joe Kelly because he seems like he's really great.
He's like the pitcher version of Dustin Pedroia when you hear him talk.
Yeah, so and he wears goggles, so.
Right. Yeah, you can't dislike that.
Dude's great. And I mean, today, like, I advocated maybe you take him out of the rotation, but it was because I wanted to put him in another super important role, not because I don't think he should be pitching.
Backup third baseman.
No, I wanted to use him like the Sox used Aceves in 2011.
Right.
Which was all the time and whenever you needed him. So he'd still throw 120 innings.
Yeah.
It's just, instead of being stuck in the back end of the rotation, where he'd throw 160, 170, 180 innings. It's use them wherever you want to, but you'd have to get another starter to make it work.
Right.
And as we've discussed for an hour on this podcast, it's not really an easy thing to do right now.
No. No. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us, Mark. The Australian lady, British Australian, I don't know, is talking to us and telling us that we have no time left. So, and it's a reasonable time to go.
All right.
But we'll be back at some point in the near future, 60 seconds, to discuss more Red Sox-related stuff and clog up your ear holes. So in any case, you can follow Mark on the Twitter, I guess, @Mark_Normandin. You can follow me on the Twitter. Yeah, why bother? And you should go to Over the Monster and read all the good stuff that Mark and Brendan and everyone else is doing there, because that's the best place to read about the Red Sox. So, all right, that'll do it for us. So, we'll talk to y'all later. Yes, I do want to end the episode.